Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Joining me is Phil Conlon of Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. And of course, Phil, I should remind everybody, you're with us Friday mornings as well on CIUT Friday morning.
Yes, and thank you, Phil. I'm happy to be back on the Taylor Report. It's been a long time since we've been able to do this. And of course we'll be doing it this way for a while more. So we're glad to be here.
We're Zoom people.
Yeah, we're Zoomers. But
comedy is emerging from this. I just saw a guy being interviewed about COVID, and as he was a doctor and he was giving his expert opinion, and his wife walked in carrying what looked like tennis rackets, and the hostess nearly died laughing, and it turned into a kind of a comedy routine.
Well, so that's good. That's a benign walking in on a Zoom. As you know, there have been some less benign ones recently.
That was the Canadian version of this, the clean version. If you have to go to the States to get Jeffrey Toobin, I guess, if you want.
Yeah.
Another embarrassing moment. But at any rate, Zoom, yes, it's become big in our lives. So it's a little discombobulating, but we managed so far. Today we want to talk about some heavy matters developing. Of course, we've been speaking on the show about Paul Rusesabagina, and we have an interview, not an interview, pardon me, an article by Ann Garrison, published in Black Agenda Report, and was broadcast, and we will be rebroadcasting that in a few minutes. We certainly, like Anne, agree that this is a battle to keep the issue of the treatment of Paul Rusesabagina by the government of Rwanda in the forefront of our commentary and news. On him specifically, I have to say, I think the most useful comment I saw was from the lawyer Peter Robinson of the United States, a former prosecutor, but now an excellent defense counsel, who is part of the defense team chosen by Paul's family, and who, however, have not been allowed to see their client, because the government of Rwanda doesn't think it's in his best interest to see his lawyers. They've already named some lawyers for him. But Peter Robinson remarked that the key issue has already been botched by the so-called counsel for Paul Rusesabagina, because when they stood up to represent him, they did not address the matter of how he happened to be in court. What is he doing there? He was illegally removed from United Arab Emirates and brought to Rwanda against his wishes and against his knowledge. Actually, it's very hard to make out. We don't know the details, but the fact is that he was he is a Belgian citizen. He's a resident. Has resident status in the United States. He lives in Texas. And Peter Robinson pointed out that both Belgium and the United States have good relations with the government of Rwanda, and that on many occasions, the government of Rwanda has requested transfer of individuals in those countries to face charges in Rwanda. And what they do is they go through the extradition process. And the United States in particular has gone out of its way to help Rwanda. So he said, if you have a case and it's real, then it should have been brought to the US government. They didn't do that. And that raises a bunch of questions, because the United States government has not made Peter Robinson's point. Peter Robinson is the one who has to make it. there have been some parallels. Ramsey Clark, in representing a pastor, Taki Rutamana, years and years ago, former Attorney General of the United States, he won his argument against removal of Pastor Taki Rutamana to the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. However, the American government in the person of Madeleine Albright made the decision to transfer the pastor anyway. So that, further to the point about Peter Robinson's point, that you have a government that is friendly. So why didn't you make an extradition argument? So, and unfortunately the proceedings have begun in the case of Rusesabagina. And they have not raised that point, which of course should have been point one. They should have stood up and said, our client is here. He was denied his rights as a Belgian to face arguments of extradition. Instead, he's been illegally brought to Rwanda. Anyway, we'll focus on all that. We'll come back to it. There's some related matters, Phil, I want to make sure we talk about today. Something very dramatic has happened in Burundi, and I notice that most of the media, certainly not Canadian or US media, are talking about it. But Pierre Buyoya has been found guilty of assassinating the Hutu president of Burundi in October of 1993. And this is, as I say, is not reported here, not discussed so far. But this is the backdrop to our thinking about this should be that in the United States, we're probably, it would appear that Joe Biden will become the president, mainly through the disasters of COVID and the personality of Donald Trump. We'll see. But he becomes, Biden becomes the president of the world in the sense that the United States reserves the right and takes the right to interfere in the internal affairs of countries all over the world. And when the Democrats were last in office, two major figures were Samantha Powers and Susan Rice, both of whom are being touted as leader to be expected foreign policy leaders in a new Biden government. And I raised this specter of this issue of Pierre Buyoya being found guilty of assassinating the first elected, democratically elected president, Hutu president in Burundian history. He was elected in June 1993, and he was murdered in October 1993. And both Susan Rice and Samantha Power are very much involved in Burundi. And I'm telling this story of Buyoya just to remind everybody the kind of disaster Burundi went through. They, both Rice and Powers, targeted the present democratically elected Hutu government of Burundi and tried to overthrow that government. It has, since they left office, there's been a new election and there is now a new president there. My guess is that they will return probably with a little extra venom to try to do this again. And that's why we got to look at the memory of who this man is, Pierre Buyoya. Pierre Buyoya is a Tutsi who was a military man. He had been the dictator from 1987. He had ruled Burundi. And then he had finally agreed to an election. And of course, he lost the election, the population majority Hutu. And that assassination happened in October 1993 at a time when neighboring Rwanda had entered into a multi-party agreement where the sitting president, Habyarimana, was going to be participate in an election, his party, the MRND, and others, the MDR, and several other parties, had agreed to a peace process called the Arusha Peace Process, and an election was scheduled for the spring of 1994. And so the question inside Rwanda was, will the armed group led largely by Tutsi under the general named Paul Kagame, who had been in the Ugandan army, but he was leader of the RPF. The question was, well, is this a good idea to try to have an election? Will that armed group, will the minority Tutsi political leaders accept a democratic process? And they had to, it was a step of faith. They said, okay, we're going to do it. Yes, everybody agrees there's going to be a peaceful process and we're going to have elections in the spring of 94. And the leading voices for doing that were in the party called the MDR, led by Faustin Twagiri Mungu. And guess what? Practically the day that a Canadian officer named Allaire arrived in Arusha, pardon me, not in Arusha, in Kigali to peacefully organize and help the process to an election in which there's high anxiety that the minority group might decide to use force. Dadai, President Dadai, is murdered in neighboring Burundi. And Burundi is demographically the twin of Rwanda. So you can imagine the Rwandans suddenly looking across the border and saying, hey, wait a minute. The Hutus participated in an election. They elected the man. He was apparently, by the way, everybody agrees, a brilliant, likable, attractive, democratic leader. Dadai was the word brilliant is applied to him all the time. So he gets brutally killed by Tutsi army officers who controlled the Burundian army. And Rwandans all looked at each other and said, hey, we're about to have an election and this just happened next door in Burundi. And so it led to the split, dramatic split of the MDR led by Faustin Twagiri Mungu. But you need that backdrop and always keep in mind, you cannot talk about Rwanda without talking also about Burundi. They share political tensions, political issues. But now Buyoya, his career path is interesting. He has now been convicted of that murder all these years later, 2020. They have taken a step. Now, the Supreme Court found him guilty and 16 others. Guess what he's doing for a living? He is the representative of the African Union, a nice paying job, a prestige job, in Mali, called Mali Sahel, that area. And he's been getting these jobs all the time that everybody knew that he's the one who murdered Dadai. And I think we're headed towards, you might say, a lot of turmoil. He, of course, rejects out of hand that he has to care at all about being convicted in his own country of the assassination. It's also a very bold step by the government of Burundi, because as you know, with assassinations, a lot of times people get assassinated and nobody says anything because the political consequences of taking it up, the price is too high. Pierre Buyoya and his friends, because they murdered Dadai, created a civil war in which hundreds of thousands of Burundians lost their lives. It became a bloody battle over more than a decade. In the process, it was decided to be wiser if he went abroad because there was too much heat around his name. He wanted to come back and be in power. Now, the twist that I found interesting is when I was working in Arusha, Tanzania at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, together with, of all people, Ramsey Clark, Buyoya got a nice job in the United States, and they paid him $250,000 a year to write a report, I guess he had to do it once a year, I forget, they attached him to an American university. And his little papers were to tell about human rights in the Great Lakes region of Africa. So I assume they got him a couple of assistants to do the writing. And then he signed those and he took his check. So keep your eye on the bouncing Pierre Buyoya, because this is very precipitous to convict him and 16 others. All those guys were army people. None of them very few of them are in the country. But remember that they, by that action, started the ball rolling towards a disaster that struck Rwanda. Now I mentioned Dadai was assassinated in October, just as UN and General Dallaire and the little show got started. Go around on the calendar about 6 months, and the attempt to stabilize the government in Burundi had led to a compromise. After the assassination, they finally agreed on a compromise president, Ntaryamira. So he had been in office. They put him in office in February 94. So in April 94, he's invited to a meeting in Dar es Salaam together with Habyarimana, and it was attended by Museveni of Uganda. And it turned out to be a phony meeting. Nobody could quite figure out why they were meeting. But when the meeting ended, it was late at night, or getting late. And the Habyarimana security people said, well, it's dark and we don't like to be flying at night. We don't think we should fly back to Kigali because there's a lot of tension and we don't fly at night. And the Tanzanian said, oh, we're sorry. We didn't plan on your being here, so you better go home. You should go home, they told the president of Rwanda. And so he said, okay, we go. And President Ntaryamira, fellow Hutu president from Burundi, said, well, I don't have transportation. I hadn't found, you know, so can I fly with you? They said, yes. So the two Hutu presidents got in the plane and returned to Kigali. On the return, the plane was shot down. And both of them, of course, died, along with General Sabimana, often forgotten about, but the head of the Rwandan army and the most respected military man in Rwanda. So the assassins, whom I would think consensus now agrees was the RPF, knocked off two presidents, both Hutu, and created holy havoc. That is the backdrop into which we now inherit. And we are going to see probably with the return of Susan Rice and of, what's her name? Samantha Powers, the same policy. I think that they'll be on the phone to Buyoya and say, never mind, we'll put you back in power and we'll find a way. It won't be your name on the bottle, but it'll be you. So that's the reason we talk about these things on the Taylor Report. We don't want anybody to be deluded about what the stakes are. And also, the fact is that the rest of the world, as excited as Canadians might be for the defeat of Trump, and Americans are obviously going through a kind of psycho crisis over his presidency. In Africa, for their situation, it's American imperialism. It's American colonialism. And I'll just end with the point that last week on the show, we had a representative from the organization of the Ivory Coast. He's the president. He was Jean-Hilaire Yapi, president of the Ivoirian Congress of Canada. And they are coming into an election, and their situation is that they've been sandbagged by a man named Ouattara, who had the backing of France and the United States to take power from an elected president, Mr. Gbagbo. Mr. Gbagbo won the election, according to the government of Ivory Coast, but that was overruled by France and the United States, and with the help of Ban Ki-moon, who made himself sort of the interim president, because he brought a coup to that. He supported the removal, violent removal of Gbagbo, and they placed in power Mr. Ouattara. And of course, Ouattara was supposed to represent Western values and democracy, and apparently he does, because he doesn't want to allow Mr. Gbagbo or anybody else to run against him. And he had promised not to run. But guess what? Lo and behold, he is running. And he's, of course, said other people cannot run. He's wiped out their choice possibility. And so there's violence, quite a bit of it, actually, emerging now. And we have some correspondence here, if I can find it, that we've been told by Mr. Yapi that 16 people have been killed, and people are saying that the election should not go forward, but the government is ignoring that, of course. And so it's and why is this happening? It's because French and American colonialism had never died. It never went away. And they wanted Mr. Ouattara, who is an IMF vice president, to be the guy to run the place for them. And they're going to have their way. And if they can do the same in Burundi, they'll do it. And meanwhile, we have, of course, the situation in Rwanda, where you have two women who tried to challenge Paul Kagame. One, a Tutsi woman who wants to see democracy in the country. And she and her mother were arrested, spent years in prison. And then there is, of course, Victoire Ingabire, who we've interviewed on the program. And last week, we were pleased and proud to have her on. She spent 8 years in prison. She's basically in a kind of home arrest situation. And limited in her movement. And you have a president pretty much for life, Paul Kagame, who neither Biden nor Trump have any problem with. So this is where we are. We need to recognize this. Canada's role has been, of course, the vassal role. We're going to talk about that later on in the program. We're going to be talking about Canada vis-a-vis the rest of the world. But they act like a vassal on the Rwanda matter. Two Canadian priests were killed in Rwanda 1994 by the RPF. And Canada's never thought that that was anything they needed to ask the government about. Said so they thought it was none of their business, I guess. They are going along with the Americans on that point. So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I want to remind you that we are on facebook.com/ The Taylor Report. We're also on soundcloud.com, Taylor-Report. That's facebook.com, The Taylor Report, and soundcloud.com, Taylor-Report. As I mentioned, our good friend Ann Garrison did a very nice commentary for Black Agenda Report, and the people at Voice Program on WPFWDC's Voices with Vision aired Ann's editorial on Paul Ruth Sabagina, and we're going to play that in a few moments, and we thank her very much for having done that interview. This is the Taylor Report, and we'll be back following Ann's commentary.